The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be a part of the show, call 334-321-1390 or text in at 334-784-1685. The boys are bringing you all the action on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. When it comes to the Tigers, the SEC, and the hottest topics in sports, this is where you want to be.
Big time changes are making their way from the MLB into the SEC. It's Thursday, and you're on the line.
Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, straight from the ESPN 106.7 studio, here's Christian Griffin and Trip Upton.
Yes, welcome in, welcome in. It is the Thursday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. Happy July 16th. I've said it every day this week, but every single day that I look at the calendar, I have to first off remind myself, I look at my phone as I'm giving the intro to make sure that I know that it's the right day, because saying July 16th just doesn't sound right whatsoever. We are a couple days out from SEC Media Days, and we are just about a month away from the start of the high school football season, and that is wild to think about. We are so excited to get back on the air for our respective networks with the Auburn High Sports Network, the Lee Scott Sports Network, everything that works its way throughout the Friday nights that control everybody's emotions here in Auburn, especially Auburn and Opelika. But gosh, counting down the days until football season gets started. It feels like, again, everything is going faster than it ever has. Talking season, thankfully, has gone by rather quickly, and I know that's because we're having a lot of fun here in the studio. A lot to talk about here today. We got our two wonderful guests. We have Brad Law at 2:30 of the Auburn Sports Network. We have Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast, at 3:30, and a whole lot of content to fill the gaps in there as well. I mentioned that I'm Christian Griffin here with you on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. Appreciate everybody for spending some time here with us this Thursday afternoon. I welcome a man sitting across from me here this afternoon. Trip Upton, how you doing this afternoon, sir? I know that we have had a relatively, don't want to say busy, but a relatively eventful afternoon, but it's been hopefully a solid one for you.
Yes, happy Thursday.
Yeah, there we go.
Yes, continuing to just every night. It feels like the week leading up to Christmas right now a little bit with what SEC Media Days is going to be. It's been jam-packed today, and not jam-packed in terms of just hard labor or anything crazy.
No building TV carts today.
Not today, no. I haven't went back there to look if it's still together. That might be something I need to go do. But
you
I
haven't been asked to make another one, so it's
true.
At least halfway decent.
Yes, so we should be good there, but it's just a day that the coming and going from the station a lot today, but some cool stuff and good opportunities and good reasons why we were able to step out and do that stuff, and then getting everything kind of tied up and so that we are ready to go for next week in Tampa, Florida for SEC Media Days.
Yeah, we're continuing to pile up some interviews. I believe as of now, we have six non-regular guests interviews that we are going to have for you here, with some really, really big names, some names from teams that we're going to play or that Auburn's going to play this season that you definitely want to hear from. And so very, very excited. And then everything that we can get just coverage-wise, and then walking around, getting anybody else walking around that can give us a few minutes of their time. Very, very excited for SEC Media Days. That's not where we start here this afternoon, though, because, again, Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network joining us at 2:30, and you hear his voice all the time over at Plainsman Park, and there are some big-time rule changes that are in the MLB right now, or at least are a part of the MLB, that the SEC is trying to at least adopt, if not, I guess I should say they're trying to alter and bring to their sport, if not completely adopt into the SEC. Some rule changes that we'll get into, and then also a very, very fun interview that we have for you at 2:15, just a little bit of audio from where we were this morning with a new coach being introduced, and one that I think Auburn fans are very, very excited to see on the field in the orange and blue, excited to hear from and continue to learn more and more about his philosophy of how he coaches the guys that are in the batter's box. Coach Ammo got some audio, was able to go to his introductory press conference, his introductory basically interview session earlier this morning, got to ask a couple of questions, and so I want to have that audio for you here this afternoon before we get to Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network. Also a look at the ACC, something we don't talk about too often, but how that can almost be implemented into the Southeastern Conference with what they're trying to do with a tiebreaker system for the conference championship. And so rather than just looking at overall seeding, rather than looking at overall record, they want the full body of work and the best teams to be in the conference championship for the best opportunity to make their way to the college football playoff, and the others that weren't in there to still have the opportunity to make the college football playoff. And if there's going to be other conferences, other SEC programs that want to advocate for this, we'll talk about that all in hour number one before we get into some transfer rankings and talk SEC football with Chris Gordy. So all of that coming up here on a very, very fun show this afternoon. But like we want to do to start every single show, we want to give our big-time thanks to everybody for making SEC Media Days happen.
Yeah, next week, ESPN 106.7 will be in Tampa, Florida for SEC Media Days, presented by the Orthopedic Clinic, Auburn Plaza Bar and Lounge, Apex Pest Solutions, and The Depot in downtown Auburn, Monday through Thursday. We will be there live from Digital Drive in Tampa as we prepare to kick off another glorious football season that is just so close and just so amazing that it's coming even closer. Our 7 hours of live local coverage each weekday begins with Doug Amos and the Max Roundtable. Christian was on there earlier this morning talking with Doug, getting ready to kind of again previewing what's going to go on the Auburn side of things. In SEC Media Days, he is live from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Then myself and Christian Griffin on the line, live from Tampa, Florida, right here from 2 to 4 p.m. And then Bill Cameron will close out the day with the drive from 4 to 6 p.m. He'll have people from everyone going on down in Tampa. We'll be both appearing on that show, so make sure you tune in to him as well. Throughout the week, we're going to bring you the latest headlines, the latest interviews, the latest storylines from everything going on with the Auburn Tigers, the Alabama Crimson Tide, and the SEC, the biggest talking points entering the 2026 college football season will be from Tampa. A special thank you again to the Orthopedic Clinic, Auburn Plaza Bar and Lounge, Apex Pest Solutions, and The Depot in downtown Auburn for making our SEC Media Days coverage possible. Tune in all week long for live local coverage from the SEC Media Days in Tampa, Florida, right here on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7.
And we will continue that coverage here, talking a little bit of SEC football throughout the afternoon, but do want to start, and we've had a little bit more baseball conversation over the last couple of days than I think were necessarily expected. I know the All-Star game and the Home Run Derby kind of drove a lot of those talking points, and yesterday got into an unofficial ranking of MLB movies. And
yes.
Basically, the on-the-line text box, which you can always be a part of as well at 334-784-1685. The phone lines are open probably after 2:30, in between 2:30 and 3:30. We'll close them for right now because we don't have too long before we need to get to our interview audio that we have for you from this morning. But you can always be a part of the on-the-line text box. And basically, the on-the-line breakers about to become the on-the-line backers yet again.
Yes.
Once football season. I think next week it's officially back to the on-the-line backers. But basically calling you out for baseball movies you haven't seen.
Yeah,
so,
but hey, I looked it up last night. Like
he figured out why.
I understand. I understand. And I agree with you. That
he actually watched it four times last night.
Sure, yeah. But yeah, no, I get it. But again, if you got anything that you want to say in the text box, it's always very welcome, whether we're in an interview and you want to ask who we're talking to a question or just a quick hitter or something. Yeah. to you know, a question or just a laugh. Those are some of my favorites. When people say stuff funny, either on air or off air, it's always
Send
a
us
good laugh.
Whatever.
Yes.
But yes, officially Trip now puts behind Benchwarmers, which is apparently his favorite movie of all time. Summer Catch with Jessica Biel is now a close number two.
Sure.
For obvious reasons. Obvious, very, very obvious reasons. But we do start our conversation here this afternoon talking a little bit of college baseball. And what better way to do so than to talk about rule changes? Everybody's favorite thing. Between rule changes and preseason rankings, I feel like those could go head-to-head in like a bracket-style format of everybody's just hated things about the season not taking, I guess the things that don't happen during the season. And college baseball and the SEC specifically is the most recent one because the NCAA subcommittee has approved the use of the ABS system in college baseball games. There are still a couple other loopholes, or I guess not loopholes, but a couple other things that need to be approved by the oversight committee, but the rules subcommittee has approved the use for games in 2027 in which the technology is available. We saw that for the first time in college baseball during the SEC tournaments, and I believe 57% of the challenges were successful. So 43%. Look at that math, Dwight. That's quick math right there, baby. That's not even on the rundown. But 43% of them went the way of the umpire being correct. And so I think the more that gets honed in, I think there were also a bunch of complaints about how big the strike zone was and how everything it felt like was ruled a strike. I mean, we saw that from the Auburn perspective of, holy cow, if it's at your lower shins, you better swing at it, because if it gets challenged, it's somehow going to be a strike, even though when you watch it, it clearly did not look like one. But the ABS challenge system has been approved by the subcommittee for the NCAA in which the technology would be available, essentially saying, for the SEC terms, every conference game would have it if this gets fully approved. I guess we've never gotten your thoughts. Are you a pro ABS guy, or are you more of the don't touch my game, get off my lawn?
I wouldn't say I'm pro ABS to what like Jacob was, where it was like we don't need umpires out there.
Yeah.
We need everything to be automatic. We don't need a judgment call, but I like that it keeps umpires accountable. However, I don't like that it's gotten rid of framing, which is such an art form.
Yes. Gosh, I knew I loved you.
I know. Thanks.
Yeah.
But I think that
I couldn't figure out the reason, but because of this question right here.
Yes. I understand it, and I like the option to have it, especially with it's like some calls are just egregious, especially when it's overturning a strike into a ball. Like, yes, if it is like ridiculously off the plate and you're going to call it a strike, yeah, that should be a ball in most worlds. But when it gets to the sometimes I think, especially in the SEC tournament, and Jack Hudden made a good point at this, where the letter of the law of a strike and the spirit of the law of a strike are two very different things. If it is a backdoor cutting pitch that barely touches the zone and it's a strike, I mean, yes, but no good hitter is going to swing at that.
Yeah, especially on the corners too, right? You see the letter of the law, the strike zone being the square that goes from the bottom of the letters to basically the top of the knee. Yet you've seen it naturally be altered a little bit with the human perspective of it's almost a bigger oval, right? You take away the sharp corners and you add a little bit more to the black right at the belt, but you take it away on the low pitches and the high pitches, and I feel like that's where a lot of the ABS challenges, at least in Major League Baseball, have worked their way into fruition. But again, this is not fully working its way yet, but the subcommittee has now passed for the ABS to work its way into basically whoever wants to use it if the technology is available. Again, TrackMans are at every single college field. They're at high school fields. They're at travel ball fields now. I mean, I can speak on that from my time of playing, but then also working at Perfect Game and working at all sorts of places. I mean, You can sit behind home plate and look at spin rate. You can look at launch angle. You can look at anything that you want to, and they always have the ABS. Essentially, it's an unofficial one, but it's basically showing you where the pitch was delivered, where it looked like it was, where it ended up being. And so all of that to say, if the NCAA fully approves this, you would imagine that the SEC would go into this full time. But there are some other possible changes that are being made, ones that you have seen in the MLB that are possibly making their way into college baseball as well. One of them being a 3-batter minimum. We've seen that in the MLB, I believe, after the 2019 season of relievers come into the game. It's no longer, all right, we have our lefty specialist, go face Kyle Schwarber. Go face Bryce Harper. Go face Matt Olson, and then your job is done, right? That made it to where the lineup was changed a little bit because you wouldn't have back-to-back lefties. You'd make it to where it was much harder to get just one out because, obviously, again, the 3-batter minimum made it to where you had to face at least 3 batters. There are talks of the SEC implementing that into conference play. 3-batter minimum for all pitchers. Obviously, you can face more than that, but it would eliminate the, again, you're going to come out of the bullpen, you're going to get this one out, and then we're going to go back to the bullpen, trying to speed up the game, at least on that side of things, which when it first worked its way into the MLB, I was very against, just because I guess I am a little bit more of a purist in terms of takes away the game within the game, right? The strategy of, man, this guy can't hit left-handed pitching. We're going to throw a lefty at him. Yet after that, you can now put in your best left-handed hitter. That was when Ronald Acuna was healthy and you were able to go Acuna, Olson, Riley, Ozzie Albies, and it was where there was no weak spot. And, okay, even if you like your spot against 1-3, you don't want to face a lefty with Ozzie Albies, whatever the case may be. But, again, that is a rule working its way into effect. And then one that you feel like has some people up in arms, it is the maximum of 2 pickoffs. Per base runner. So basically, again, you can pick off twice, but if you pick off a third time and you do not pick the runner off, it is essentially a balk. It is a one, you're granted one extra base as a base runner to essentially speed up the game in terms of, I mean, we see it just about every single night in college baseball of the leadoff runner gets on. The two-hole hitter is going to be standing there for 2 or 3 minutes because there will be 3, if not 4, if not 5 throwovers to the first just to keep him to keep the base runner honest and make it to where he doesn't get too big of a lead. Are any of these stand out to you that you feel strongly about one way or the other?
I do have a question.
Okay.
And you probably would be the one to answer this. Being a baseball aficionado, the 3-batter minimum, I assume, does not apply if it's like the 9th inning and you already have an out.
That is correct.
Yeah, because I was about to say, like, there's no way to enforce that. It's like you can't go to your bullpen.
It is 3 batters or the end of the inning. Yeah.
Perfect. The end of the inning.
Yes.
So you could put in a guy for the...
If it happened to work its way into effect where a Kyle Schwarber or a whoever the case may be...
Is the last batter of an inning.
Is up with 2 outs, a runner on first...
In the bottom of the
2 outs in the bottom of the 7th inning. He could come in and you can only get 1 out. So that guy will not have to work his way back out in the 8th.
Okay. That's all I needed to know. Yeah. I'm fine with that. I mean, I get it. The game within the game is something you're so right. Like with lineup construction of like lefty-righty. I think that's being taken away in favor of a more analytical approach of these are our best projected hitters. We're going to play them at the top of the lineup instead of, well, I need to have a lefty higher in the lineup. He might not be a good hitter, but if we play a right-handed pitcher as a starter or out of the bullpen, he's going to be more effective because we have so many lefties. Now it's just, okay, who are your best four? That's going to be, like, again, just let's look at slugging percentage, OPS, all the advanced metrics.
Yeah,
that's how you build your lineup. I think that part of lineup construction has gone away a little bit, and we could talk for hours about that, I'm sure. But I think I understand the idea of the rule of speeding it up. I will say, though, for the pickoffs, I'm in favor of that. I think that it just slows games down so much, and 90% of the time they don't pick the runner off, and it's just, throw down, pitch, throw again just to check.
Mm-hmm.
1-2, and if it's a full count, you're going to throw down again because he's expecting maybe now I can steal. And just with the still, it's stealing bases is still a hard art form. Like, yeah, every team's going to have one or two guys that can do it. Like, I look at Ronald Acuna, Ozzie Albies, guys that are base thefts, but it's a very much like a thing in the game that I don't think pickoffs affect that as much, because you don't normally, if you're a good enough base thief, you don't need that big of a leadoff, which means you're not going to get picked off as much.
Well, funny enough, I actually completely disagree, because I think that there's obviously pros and cons with each of these, and also a cause and effect. I think that with the two pickoff minimum, or two pickoff maximum, essentially, I think that is what brought back base stealing into the MLB, because stealing bases is such a lost art. You don't see it anymore. But then again, you saw the Ronald Acuna number of stolen bases because sure. You know, okay, this guy doesn't want to attempt to pick off a third time, because if he doesn't get me, I'm going to walk my you-know-what to second base. Next thing you know, I'm in scoring position. I think that has brought back the stolen bases so much. And so although I don't necessarily love the maximum of two pickoffs for base runners, because, again, I think that's a part of the game. I think the booing is incredible.
Yeah.
When the other team does it, but not when your team does it, because if they do it, it's perfectly fine. Yet that being said, I am all for seeing more action on the base paths. And if that is the effect of the cause of what the SEC is expected to adopt, then I will happily bite my cheek and happily watch some of the speediest base runners in college baseball just work their way around the bases.
I was looking at it more from a pitching perspective, sure. Of like the it doesn't really make a difference. I don't understand why. Like, especially when, like, Jacob told me this so much during when I would be helping him with any Auburn High stuff. I hate when they throw down a second, because if it gets sure. ripe, it gets by. Like,
yeah, the inside move and the back picks, those are.
But yeah. I understand if you're a pitcher and like you're a left-handed pitcher and you can see first base, mm-hmm. just yeah, like I get like throwing it down, like I get that, because that doesn't take a ton of time, but. I think that is true, that the thought of I can't throw it again allows for more stolen bases. I do love that. Like I said, I think it's come back since this rule, but I think at the end of the day, it's not a like massive. Again, pickoffs are very effective in general, to be quite honest with you. So I don't have a problem with it.
Again, a couple of rule changes expected to be adopted by the SEC. A three-batter minimum, and you can only pick off twice, and if you don't get them the third time, then it's basically a balk, and you get the extra base, as well as the NCAA subcommittee approving ABS where technology is available. Still needs to get officially passed, but definitely making the steps needed to work its way from the SEC tournament into everyday college baseball. We'll take a break. We'll come back, and we have a little bit of audio that we have from a man that knows a lot about offense. Didn't necessarily have to worry about, had to worry about stealing bases. They stole a heck of a lot of bases, but also enjoyed hitting the ball out of the ballpark. Coach Amoretti, Coach Ammo, got his official statements, his official introduction here this morning, and we were at there. We got to ask him a couple questions. Want to have that for you as we're just off and running here on the Thursday edition of On the Line.
From revolution to rockets, from dusty frontiers to city skylines, these are the moments that shaped America. This is the American Minute, presented by Bucks Island. April 15th, 1947. One man walked into Ebbets Field wearing a Brooklyn Dodgers uniform. His name was Jackie Robinson. He became the first black player in modern Major League Baseball. The road ahead would be anything but easy. He endured insults, threats, and relentless pressure. Yet he answered with courage and remarkable play. His success changed baseball forever and helped change America. One more moment that shaped the country we call home. This American Minute is presented by Bucks Island. Family-owned and operated, serving boaters since 1948. Online at bucksisland.com.
You're on the line with Christian Griffin and Trip Upton. Be a part of the show by calling 334-321-1390 or text us at 334-784-1685.
All right, we're back here on the Thursday edition of On the Line. Appreciate everybody for being here with us. And we continue our baseball conversation with some audio that we wanted to send your way as Coach Nick Amorati made his official statements this afternoon. Got to speak with the media. Myself and Tripp were there. Got to ask him a couple of questions about just his life, his working way through the SEC from Kentucky to Georgia, and now Auburn, his time at those places, and how they have kind of helped shape his mentality as well as his mindset on the baseball diamond. I think the biggest quote that you'll hear says, "I want to win. That's exciting for me. I want the other team to be like, I don't want to face them again." I think there's a whole lot of excitement on the baseball diamond. A heck of a hire yet again from Coach Butch Thompson. Here is the audio this morning that we were able to gather from Coach Nick Amirati and his statements with the media.
I guess for you, just talking about making the move, obviously some familiarity here, but the roster and that roster makeup, how important that was for you when you were looking to come here?
Yeah, absolutely. That's huge. Obviously, my prior relationship with Coach Thompson and Coach Cohen was a big factor as well, but the team coming back was a huge factor. I think we have a great group of guys. Got to speak with a lot of them on the phone already and looking forward to talking to more with them. But yeah, the team, I'm excited about it.
Hey Nick, I'm Adam, but I just wanted to ask you, from really like your last two stops in the SEC, and especially just the variance of offense with those two teams, what do you feel like you've learned the most from those last two stops and having to navigate all that?
Yeah, I think, you know, anytime you're in different places, different ballparks, it's really all just about finding out what's best for the team and, you know, scoring as many runs as possible. You know, there's a lot of different ways to score runs. We're gonna find every single way that we possibly can to do so.
Do you like to go by Coach Ammo at all? Or are you
Ammo, Coach Ammo, whatever, okay. Whatever you want.
Well, Coach Ammo, I'm curious about you know, going back to Kentucky 2 years ago or 3 years ago, and then Georgia this year. Kentucky 120 stolen bases, I guess 45 sacrifice hits, and then Georgia, you know, a few years later, you're, you know, setting records in home runs and stuff. Do you have a certain approach, or is it just by player, or has your approach kind of changed over time?
No, I think it's whatever it takes, honestly. You know, sometimes the game calls for a safety bunt or a stolen base. Sometimes the game calls to bang. I think it's whatever. Just knowing your players and knowing the conditions and who you're facing and all the different situations, I think, plays a factor. But obviously we want to hit. And I think we just want to be aggressive, take everything that the defense gives us and, you know, look for every opportunity that we can.
Could you maybe recap part of your journey with the game of baseball, growing up in New York and New Jersey, and then finding your way south? And have you always been a baseball guy?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think the day I was born, my dad said he bought me a catcher's mitt, and, you know, kind of been on that journey ever since. You know, growing up there, you obviously had to do a lot of stuff inside. And for me, I got an opportunity to come to the South, and, you know, I played at a JUCO in Texas and then ended up going to Mississippi State, and been in the South ever since. Love it. Love the weather. Love the people. Yeah.
How about the Southeastern Conference specifically? Has that helped your development being a part of this league?
Absolutely. It's the best league in the country, best coaches, best players, best fans. Everything about it is the best. The resources. You got to be at the top of your game to stay at the top, and, you know, it takes everybody.
What was it like being recruited by Butch and John Cohen back in the day and playing for those two guys? And what's it mean to you to be back, you know, sort of with them and now more of a peer?
Yeah, it almost kind of happened the same way. I remember the first time talking with them. I was sitting in, I don't know, some class, and they called me, said, you know, they were going to offer me. I think I went, you know, being from New Jersey, I actually didn't really know much about the school. Went back, looked it up, called them back, said, I'm in. And kind of similar situation here.
You talked about kind of the fans, and you guys played here last year. To see the growth and development of this program, how exciting is it to be part of this now and seeing what they've done here the last few years?
Oh, I'm super excited. The fan base was unbelievable. It was a big-time SEC atmosphere, and to see what Coach Thompson and the administration has done with this ballpark, all the attention to detail, all the little things that they did, they all have like a special meaning, and, you know, where it's all about the fans, it's all about the alumni. It's pretty cool to see the attention to detail that went into every little aspect of this ballpark, and yeah, I'm super excited to be a part of it.
You mentioned the excitement for the roster returning, but how attractive is it having so many guys returning on the mound as well? Obviously, you're that offensive coordinator role. There's nobody that loves putting up zeros more than you because it makes your job just that much easier. What is it like having Coach Tiefert, having Coach Thompson there to set the tone on the mound to make you where your job's just that much easier?
Yeah, the pitching staff obviously was the best in the SEC last year. I mean, it takes a little pressure off yourself that you don't have to score 20 runs every game. We'd like to. I mean, that's the goal. But, yeah, definitely – Getting to see those guys work with the pitchers is unbelievable. They're all super sharp. They get the most out of those guys, and yeah, just excited to get to work with them.
Could you walk us through the decision process of coming here when they first Butch approached you, and what went into your decision, and why Auburn?
Yeah, it happened pretty fast. Obviously, the prior relationship with Butch, he's one of the best men, along with one of the best coaches in the country. You know, my family, my wife's from Mississippi, and I've closer to home for her, and, you know, kind of all those different factors. The fan base here is unbelievable. The facilities, the resources that we have, the team coming back, all those little things I feel like played a factor, made it a pretty easy decision.
You mentioned the roster, but Chase Raelich, Bob Terrell, and McCrane brothers, Ethan Bingham, and that's a really good nucleus returning. What have you seen out of those guys about, you know, I guess, watching them last year and now maybe probably digging in a little bit already?
Yeah, they're unbelievable. They're unbelievable players. They're unbelievable people. Got to speak with them on the phone for a little bit. Yeah, I'm really excited to get to work with them, and I'm happy I don't have to face them.
Coach, last season Georgia had the number one rated portal class, and I know you were a big part of that. What's your strategy when it comes to talent acquisition, both in the high school ranks as well as in the transfer portal?
Yeah, I think, you know, at least with the portal, being able to identify players fast, being quick and decisive with your decisions, but ultimately it's about getting the right people in the building, doing your due diligence with, you know, the evaluation along with the makeup check, I think, is a big part of it. If you get the right people in the building with the correct amount of talent, you got a shot.
Coach Ammo sounds pretty fired up to be here, and not necessarily, again, I don't think you complain if it's a man that is very happy to speak through the actions instead of the words. And again, we'll continue to learn more about him. Going to have him on the phone lines from not too far from now, but really excited for everything that's to come for this Auburn baseball offense. We'll take a break. We'll come back. Get Brad Law on the phone lines of the Auburn Sports Network. Get his thoughts, his immediate ones from Coach Ammo, as well as some of the names that were announced, or the names that were announced for Auburn in SEC Media Days. All of that here as the music kicks us out of here. 30 minutes in to the Thursday edition of On the Line.
On the Line, and we're just 30 minutes in. Now back to the studio with Christian Griffin and Trip Upton on ESPN 106.7.
30 or so minutes into the Thursday edition of On the Line. Appreciate everybody for being here with us. And with this being the time frame, it means we get to bring in our guy of the Auburn Sports Network, Mr. Brad Law, joining us on the phone lines. Brad, hopefully all is well in your world as we continue to count down to SEC Media Days and continue counting down the dog days of summer.
51 days to kick off. Whew. And we are counting, which means, what, like 1 in 7 days out of the year, like a seventh of the year is left before football season starts. I got weird ways to count down to the start of the season, but that's where we are, 51 days away.
We are 1/7 of the calendar away from Auburn football. I think that's the very easy way of looking at it.
Yeah,
very much so. Well, again, we are very much counting down to that as well as we are counting down to SEC Media Days. And we know we've gotten a lot of those thoughts on your side of things talking about what you expect to hear, what you want to hear from Alex Golish, as well as just the SEC. And we'll get your thoughts on the three names that are joining Alex Golish here in just a few moments. But just wrapped up a conversation talking all things SEC baseball, and we were able to talk with Coach Nick Amorati here this morning, get his official press release and talk with the media. Played some of that audio, and I think it speaks for itself that he's fired up to be here, and the Auburn fans are fired up to be here with him as well. What were your initial thoughts, and now that you've had a little time to process everything that he has done at his prior stops and what you are hoping and expecting to see with him at the Auburn Tigers?
Yeah, I wish we could do a countdown for baseball season. Yeah. We're probably right around exactly 7 months away, so probably 210-ish days away from the start of baseball season. That's going to be a long 200-plus days to wait, because this is an exciting hire. You know, being close to the program, I know what Butch Thompson thinks of his current roster and of the potential in this team, and I know where his mind is relative to the goals for this program and the way they've grown. The goals are different now than they were even 10 or 20 or 30 years ago. It's not just getting to Omaha, but it's getting there and winning the whole thing. And when you have so many guys who were freshman All-Americans and all-conference players, and you have all this pitching coming back, And now Gabe Gross makes the decision to step aside after 9 years. Where do you go? He wasn't going to take a step back. And so he goes out and gets the hitting coach for the team that led the nation in home runs back-to-back seasons. And before that, they were at Kentucky, where they had 100 stolen bases and, you know, went to the College World Series for the first time ever. I think before Amorati got to Kentucky, they'd been to 7 regionals. Well, in his 3 years there, they hosted regionals twice, went to Supers back-to-back years, and went to the College World Series once. So this guy, in a very short period of time, has a really distinguished track record of success offensively. His teams have done it slugging. They've done it running and sacrificing, and they've done it different ways at different stops. And so I don't know if you can ask for a whole lot more out of this hire, quite frankly. Like, that, I don't know that there would have been a lot of other guys higher on the list than Nick Amorati before this, you know, before the hire was official.
Brad, looking at, I know you mentioned Gabe Gross, the former hitting coach who's now transitioning to a member of the athletic department and will be doing some stuff with TV. I'm sure he'll join you some on the radio broadcast as well. Talk to me about his impact and what his new role is going to be looking like with the Auburn Athletic Department.
Well, that's the last question in the interview, because I can talk about it for the next 20 minutes. I'll try to give the shortened version of this. So I think about Gabe Gross not just in his 9 years in the program, but just how much passion and regard he has for Auburn. This is a guy who played the hardest position to play in football during a period of transition within the program in the late 90s, then decided to focus on baseball and had a wildly successful Auburn career, had a successful professional career with a World Series trip, I believe, included with Tampa, and then came back and had a successful analyst career and has had a tremendously successful career as an assistant with the Auburn program. Not only has he been successful professionally, been successful personally as well. His family's a priority. They're at the ballpark, smiling and happy and together. Auburn is about family, and Auburn baseball has a family atmosphere with it. One of the things I enjoyed most being around Gabe the last few years is watching Gabe and his son play catch on the field when the players are warming up. Not taken away from time he was supposed to be doing something as a coach, just there was idle time. So they play catch, and I love that for his son and for Gabe and for everybody watching it. I think it's worth noting, now we'll get into the accomplishments on the field here in a minute, I'll try to wrap up this long answer, but it's worth noting that the last couple of years, you know, transfer portal, you get new guys in, and, you know, do they have the Auburn roots that maybe players used to? No, but he wanted to make sure that they had an appreciation for this place.
Sure.
So he made sure that the guys learned the fight song, word for word. And there were a lot of days around the batting cages where, you know, a guy would come up and they'd talk about their swing. And then another guy come up and go, hey, all right, I think I got the second I think I got the second verse. Let me, you know. And so they'd go through it until those guys learned every word. So the fact that the team sings the fight song in the dugout after wins,
yeah,
you can credit that to Gabe. And I think that's a special thing. Now let's add to that. SEC Player of the Year, Sonny DeShera. Number of freshman All-Americans, especially the last 2 years. I think of Stephen Williams and Ike Irish, guys who came in and immediately flourished. It's one thing to have talent, but to diminish the learning curve down to a very small curve your first year in a program and have that kind of success, I think that's coaching. I think that's learning from a guy who knows the league inside and out. And, you know, all those regionals and super regionals and the two College World Series trips and the way the program has grown, his imprint on that program is tremendous.
Very well said, sir. Very well said. Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network here joining us on the phone lines. And final baseball question before we get to some SEC Media Day coverage with you here on the phone lines. You feel like change is inevitable. You felt like it was just a matter of time. And you were one of the people that got to see it firsthand of the ABS challenges in Hoover for the SEC tournament. The NCAA subcommittee has now approved the process of ABS challenges working its way, given the technology is there and is available for both teams at wherever the event may be. Still has to go through a couple other steps to get fully passed, but we imagine it's only a matter of time until this works its way into fruition. We saw the frustrations and obviously the changes that needed to happen in Hoover. Do you have a stance one way or the other, not even just college baseball, but baseball in general of the ABS?
I like it. I think it's done a lot for the major league game.
Sure.
I think it's sped it up a little bit, and it's given a, you know, it's a little bit of strategy to it. You don't want to use your challenges too early, so you have to be discretionary with it. But also, you know, once a call, you can grumble at an umpire, and it can compound.
Mm-hmm.
If you feel like a guy is just consistently bad, and maybe he is, maybe he's not, but if you feel like it, there's just this like unsettled tension in the ballpark. We've all felt it at the ballpark. ABS quiets some of that. Like, I think that was clearly a strike. All right, challenge.
Yeah.
It's not a strike. It's a ball. Move on to the next thing. So they've got to fix it. The strike zone itself trended low in Hoover when they did it for the SEC tournament.
Very much so.
But it was also, I mean, it was exploratory. They were experimenting with it. So I think they knew that. They learned that. And, you know, you got to work on tweaking the actual strike zone a little bit, but I like it as a whole because it can relieve some of that tension that tends to grow toward, you know, umpires occasionally at
sure.
the ballpark.
Yeah. Definitely. One more I lied about baseball, because there were a couple others that got implemented as well that are the SEC is expecting to adopt a three-batter minimum, which we see in the MLB, so no more just lefty-lefty specialists that come in for one batter, and then the pickoff rule as well. Either one of those stand up for – make you have a thought one way or the other in terms of approve or deny?
I don't love it personally, but it doesn't matter what I think. I think that's, you know – it's the game. If you get a guy on base and you want to hold him on, you got to throw over to keep him close. I also think that there's some guys who throw over 8-9 times to buy time for the bullpen.
I agree with that 100%.
But you throw the baby out with the bathwater there. You take a little of the, you know, after you throw over a couple of times now, and a guy wants to go, he's maybe more likely to go. So maybe you take a little of that strategy away. And then I love the lefty-lefty, righty-righty, be able to switch a guy out matchups. I wonder what the answer becomes. You know, do offensive coaches change their strategy in building a lineup at all? I don't know. I like those elements of the game. I know why they're doing it. They're going to try to speed the game up even more. And they didn't ask me, but
they should.
I don't know. I think you're taking away a little bit of the strategy of the game.
Yeah, I agree. Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network here with us on the phone lines. And as promised, did want to get you and your thoughts on the three names that are making their way to Tampa with Alex Golish. You have Byron Brown, which I think was the no-brainer. I think that was the obvious choice. You have Champ Anthony, the Pirate, out of the defensive back room, overcoming the injuries. But, again, a big piece of the culture. And then if you're speaking culture, I don't think that there's anybody better than Alex McPherson to tell his story both on and off the field. What do these three individuals represent for Alex Golish and this Auburn Tiger team in 2026?
You know, that's really that's a good question. I love the potential angles of this because you go one offense, one defense, one special teams, and Alex is the only kicker going to media days. So Alex Golish is the only coach who is focused on all three facets of the game equally. I mean, we can say that definitively, right, since he's the only one that's bringing a kicker to media days. So, no, but I think what it does show you is they do all three have excellent stories to tell. They have all overcome injuries at some point in their career. Champ and Alex can speak to having deep Auburn roots. And if this is about telling the story of Auburn football and telling the story of, you know, the hunger for these guys individually and collectively to have success this year, I think this is a really good trio to do that. On top of this, all three guys are intelligent and charismatic, and I think people are going to flock to hear what they all have to say. We've seen Alex and Byron in front of the camera a little more than we have Champ at this point, but Champ is like he's the epitome of confidence and, you know, that edge that you want really everybody on all positions on your team to play with. So I love the opportunity for these guys to tell their story and to tell Auburn's story and to tell about their roots within the Auburn football program, Alex and Champ in particular, and then Byron's the face of your program and incredibly charismatic in front of a camera. So really, really looking forward to the storytelling next week.
Yeah, looking forward to seeing those three names as well as Coach Alex Golish Tuesday morning in Tampa, Florida. Again, we'll be bringing you all the live coverage with all of our 7 hours of local coverage here on ESPN 106.7. Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network here with us on the phone lines. Plug everything you got. Where are you telling your stories right now that everybody needs to know?
Yeah, we'll be starting Tiger Talk again soon in about, I guess, 6 weeks or so. We're pretty close to that. We'll give all those details. In the meantime, we're doing stuff every day over at the Barn Auburn on YouTube, including a 24/7 live stream and Village Vice, a show we do with Zach Blackerby. So just check out that YouTube channel if you want more and more Auburn content. You guys do a great job on ESPN 106.7 throughout the day. So much local programming there as well, and we appreciate that greatly.
Yes, sir. Well, we appreciate your time, and we look forward to talking to you again next week. And until then, stay away from the spicy chicken sandwiches.
I don't know if I can. I'm just glad they have milk. Okay, they have milk, and that was good by me.
Yes, sir. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you again next Thursday.
Sounds good, guys. War Eagle.
War Eagle. Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network joining us every single Thursday at 2:30, giving his insight, giving his knowledge, and we greatly appreciate his time. We'll take a break. We'll come back and quickly wrap up hour number one right after this here on the Thursday edition of On the Line. Stick around.
You are on the line with Christian Griffin and Trip Upton on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on the Thursday edition of On the Line. He is Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. Appreciate everybody for spending some time here with us this afternoon. A really fun hour number one. Appreciate Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network for joining us and for continuing our baseball coverage of Auburn baseball even throughout the offseason. It feels like there's something to talk about. And when you have a guy like Coach Ammo making his way to the Plains and the immediate impact that he is going to make, feels like there brings even more excitement out of play. Plainsman Park. That being said, you will happily you count down the days to baseball, yes, but yeah. I guess you're not wishing for baseball season to be here just because I hope that means football has a good year and basketball has a good year. I really hope we don't get to November or December and it's like, all right, Coach Thompson, pressure is back on you to perform really well again.
Yeah, I'd love to be talking to football well into December and even January. I'd love to be talking about basketball late into March into early April. You know, in a perfect world, I love our baseball people. I love Butch Thompson. But if they aren't our lead story every show until SEC play in mid-April, I'm totally okay with that.
Yeah, sounds like that's a fantastic problem to have. And again, that is not a shot whatsoever at Coach Butch Thompson because I think for those that are daily listeners, you know that I will sit here and talk baseball all 8 hours. I'll talk baseball all 7 hours of local coverage if I truly need to. But if that is not the main talking point, then it means there's hopefully a lot of success between some of the other major sports. Hour number one in the books. We flip over to hour number two. We have Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast, joining us. We have ESPN transfer portal rankings. Where do Auburn players that are joining the Tigers rank, and the ones that are leaving or that have left, where do they rank, as well as the ACC announcing a new tiebreaker system for the conference championship? All of that coming up here in hour number two.
An Auburn Network production.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be a part of the show, call 334-321-1390 or text in at 334-784-1685. The boys are bringing you all the action on the Auburn Opelika sports leader. When it comes to the Tigers, the SEC, and the hottest topics in sports, this is where you want to be.
ESPN has officially released their transfer portal updated rankings, and Auburn only has one transfer on the list.
Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, straight from the ESPN 106.7 studio, here's Christian Griffin and Trip Upton.
Hour number one in the books. We welcome you into hour number two here on the Thursday edition of On the Line. He is Trip Upton. I am Christian Griffin. We appreciate everybody for being here with us on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. Been a really fun hour number one. Got into a lot of baseball conversations with some changes that are making their way or are trying to make their way into college baseball and the SEC in particular. One of those being the ABS challenge has been approved by the NCAA subcommittee. They still need to pass a couple other tests to be officially approved by the NCAA, but you feel like it's just a matter of time until it works its way into the game. Change is inevitable, folks, and I can speak from it firsthand that I do not necessarily love the idea of the overall change, yet I can't say that it hasn't helped the game, at least to some extent. But I had a really fun conversation on that side of things. Also talked about more changes that the SEC is expected to adopt, kind of the MLB route, a three batter minimum, as well as only two pickoffs basically per batter, and then it will reset. But if you don't pick them off the third time, it essentially works as a balk. You take the extra base, and trying to speed up the game and possibly add a little bit more of a base running factor into the game, because again, stolen bases is such a lost art. Base running is a lost art, and you've seen it work its way back into the MLB a little bit. You're seen a little bit more of it over the past couple of years, again, with that change. And then also, again, the three batter minimum, trying to get rid of the bullpen time that it takes to warm up, because, I mean, those 3 minutes it's too long, and we can't sit there and talk to each other and drink our discounted beer and our discounted hot dogs at Plainsman Park during that time. But they are trying to eliminate the lefty-lefty specialists, the guys that come in and get one out, and then you go right back to the bullpen, implementing that three-batter minimum that the MLB has. Then we got with Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network. He joined us to talk about the audio we have with Coach Nick Amirati joining the Auburn Tigers officially. He spoke with the media. We were there. We got to ask a couple of questions for Coach and his mindset towards the team, his excitement for the team, how he's already been on the phones with multiple guys and really, really excited for the guys that are returning and the guys that are making their way from the high school level and the transfer portal rankings as well. We also talked to Brad about the three names making their way to Tampa with Coach Alex Golish, Champ Anthony, Byron Brown, and Alex McPherson, and what those three names mean representing the Auburn Tigers. All of that was in hour number one. If you missed any of it, you can always go back and check it out over at our podcast center at ESPNAU.com.
And in hour number two, we're going to hear from Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast. he'll be able to talk about just all the storylines continuing to go into SEC Media Days, the players, what teams brought a quarterback and aren't bringing a quarterback. That'll be a big topic of discussion there. We'll also look at an ESPN article looking at the top transfers to and from the Auburn Tigers, and does it matter at the end of the day who's on the roster and if these players were on the roster comparatively. We'll also look at the ACC's new tiebreaker system for conference championships and how it could work its way and how the SEC could potentially follow something suit because of the rationale there. But if you want to be a part of the conversation, phone lines are open for the first 30 minutes of the hour. Give us a call at 334-321-1390. The text box always open, whether it's a quick hitter, a question for either us or our guests, as well as anything else going on your mind right now. That's 334-784-1685.
Totally off topic, and I partially bring this up out of jealousy, but I also bring it up out of real impressed. From the unnamed golf app where you can track scores with your buddies, one of my buddies just put in him shooting a 95 on the course, which is pretty solid for, again, he has very much improved from the last times that I've played with him. He started with a 7 and a 9, and so the fact of, I think that was a par 4 and a par 5, so you start 7 over on two holes, and you work your way to a 95. Nah, not bad, Mr. G, not bad whatsoever, playing Collins Hill Golf Course. I haven't played that one. But
in Georgia?
Yeah, but you can do that information with what you will. Everybody can sleep tonight knowing now that my friend Gavin shot a 95 on the golf course, but also how we're all jealous of him that I was not on the golf course right now. I don't know. I wouldn't be happy. I say it humbly that I would not be very happy if I shot a 95 on the golf course. What, so
if I shoot a 95, drug test me immediately.
That you shoot a 95, you still have 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, and 18 left to play, right?
Sure, yeah. That sounds about right. But look, it doesn't matter, because if instead of counting up my score, we need to be counting down to SEC Media Days coming up next week and our amazing sponsors that are helping us get down there.
I guess that was a lob towards me to read a little bit of information your way. So I will do that. And next week on ESPN 106.7, we head to Tampa, Florida for SEC Media Days, presented by the Orthopedic Clinic, Auburn Plaza Bar and Lounge, Apex Pest Solutions, and the Depot in downtown Auburn. You join us Monday through Thursday for all of our live coverage from Digital Drive in Tampa, Florida, as we prepare and catch you down to the unofficial start of the college football season. Our 7 hours of local coverage each weekday begins with Doug Amos and the Max Roundtable from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Then myself and Trip Upton will take you on the line from 2 to 4, and then Tampa, and then Bill Cameron with the Drive will close everything out from 4 to 6 each and every day. And so the same 7 hours that you're used to, we will get that for you, but live from Tampa, Florida. Throughout the week, we will bring you the latest headlines, the storylines, and all interviews from the Tigers, the Tide, and all of our SEC big talking points entering the 2026 season. A big thank you once again to the Orthopedic Clinic, Auburn Plaza Bar and Lounge, Apex Pest Solutions, and the Depot in downtown Auburn for making our SEC Media Day coverage possible, and tune in all week long right here for all of the local coverage on ESPN 106.7. And that is SEC Media Days, but ACC Media Days have just concluded, and there's been a lot of storylines out of that, and I don't necessarily spend or plan on spending too much time. If you feel otherwise, feel free to tell me. I don't plan on spending too much time talking about the Mike Norvell stuff that's going on, basically how he's 38-34, a losing record in the ACC, and is on one of the hottest seats in America, yet he says he doesn't feel as if he's coaching for his job in 26.
You don't want to talk about Bill O'Brien saying the ACC is just as good as the SEC and the Big Ten?
I mean,
because that was a quote that came out today, but I think Bill O'Brien needs to be more worried about maybe keeping his job at Boston College, because it has not been good, and their star tight end just tore his Achilles today.
It's news that you want to hear.
Yeah, just the most calm, most average Saturday in Chestnut Hill. But the big news that I wanted to talk about today with you, Christian, was the ACC tiebreaker change. Now, think back last season to the 2025-26 season for ACC football. You had some pretty good teams, you'd say. Miami, national runner-up. They were a pretty good team, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. Ups and downs, but yeah.
Yeah, and then you had Virginia, another pretty solid team. I mean, they were kind of out of nowhere. You know, Tony Elliott, a guy that was coming into the year coaching for his job, ending up being able to be a contender once a big games in Charlottesville and was able to compete. They were a pretty good team, right?
Yeah, I mean, powerhouse. I mean, that's what you think of when you think of ACC football.
Right, and then you even had some dark horses, your SMUs and your Georgia Techs and teams that were able to be in the conversation all year long. You know, it was really, and even Pittsburgh, a dark horse team. And you know, you'd think that one of those teams would have...
Dark horse? Would you say they're having fun and maybe a dark horse to win the Heisman?
They could be focused on having fun. I mean, Pat Narduzzi doesn't have a ton of fun doing quite literally anything because I do not like him. If whatever Jacob did not like about Penn State and Gonzaga, that's me with Pittsburgh. I do not like Pat Narduzzi at all. We'll get into that more as we get closer to football season, I'm sure. But, you know, for one of those teams, like, wouldn't you think that, like, the ACC would have this powerhouse champion that would be in the college football playoff and compete to win a national title, just like the Clemson teams and the Florida State teams of old, right, Christian?
Yeah, you'd expect, you know, to be fearing the ACC in terms of their conference champion.
You would be if it wasn't for the Duke Blue Devils, a team that lost to UConn during the regular season. I'm going to read you some of these.
I mean, that's a pretty good loss to Dan Hurley, though. I mean, all things considered.
No. This is Jim Mora football. A team that also lost to a Tulane, even though they were the ones that had Darian Mensah. They ended up going to the ACC title game in Charlotte because of one of the most ridiculous tiebreakers of all time. Virginia, 7-1. They were the quote-unquote home team in the ACC championship game. And then there was a logjam for number two, the Duke Blue Devils, the Miami Hurricanes, the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets, the SMU Mustangs, and the Pittsburgh Panthers. Now, because of what the rules were, you'd think, okay, maybe Miami would get in because they're the better team overall. Georgia Tech beat Duke during the regular season as well and had some big wins. But Georgia Tech lost to Pittsburgh, so you couldn't put them over Pittsburgh. So Pittsburgh maybe needs to be in there instead. But it was Duke because of a tiebreaker rule that was the combined winning percentage of conference opponents. Basically, how it worked out was that Duke got rewarded for the teams they played being better than the teams the other teams played despite losing more games. Especially in the out-of-conference.
Basically, the college basketball quad one system for the non-con. Doesn't matter who you beat, it matters who you play.
Yes, correct. And because they were able to do well in the ACC, I'm going to give them credit, they were able to turn the season around, but they lost to the best teams they played, both in the in-conference and then lost to basically everyone they played out-of-conference. And because of that, and because of another log jam below them with the Louisville Cardinals, the Wake Forest Demon Deacons, the NC State Wolfpack, the California Golden Bears, and the Clemson Tigers all finishing at 4-4, it really mattered on who was the best of the bad teams. I mean, Florida State up there, a powerhouse team. If anyone was to lose to Florida State last year, that'd be pretty embarrassing, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, I'd say so.
So I'd say so as well. But they just looked at this and said, now with the automatic qualifier for the ACC, after missing the college football playoff last year, their champion, only Miami making it in as the last team in, the ACC and Commissioner Jim Phillips said, we are going to change that. They are now going to be doing, in the event of a three-team or tie more, it's the best record among head-to-head results.
Wow.
What that?
So it's actually like the full body of work and like the teams that you actually play in conference in the regular season?
Yeah, so if Georgia Tech defeats Pittsburgh and Duke but loses to this team that's like a Louisville in an upset game, that's not going to penalize them as much if it's a three-way tie between Miami, Pittsburgh, and Georgia Tech.
It's basically the college football, or you see it more in college basketball, but you see it in college football as well, of like the pyramid of, well, this team lost to this team, but this team lost to this team, but this team beat this team that they lost to, so basically by the standard, UCF is the national champion.
Effectively, yes. It's getting towards a idea that head-to-head matters, and a team should not fall backwards into a conference championship game. And I know that we are probably 5 years out from these not existing. I know you have your model of the...
It's perfect. Listen. Everybody listen. It's perfect.
Yeah, the model of it's like 3v6, 4v5, and make it like a day in Atlanta.
Or 1 and 2 automatic bids. The winner of 3 and 6 and 4 and 5 get the next opportunities.
Right. Mm. So the ACC does not have that opportunity, however, because the ACC is a weaker league overall. I hate to say it as a guy that was born and bred on ACC football, but it is a weaker league.
Heck, you better not learn to hate it now.
No, I do love the ACC. I really do. I remember when, you know, Jameis Winston was slinging it around. You had Deshaun Watson being able to be a productive member of society and also a good quarterback on top of that. And you still had Lamar Jackson in the league as well. And there were just studs across the board in the ACC. And I remember that when they had two teams in 2020 and Clemson and Notre Dame for the 1 year they're a part of a conference, Brandon. But look, I think that this is a right decision because of the idea that you shouldn't fall backwards into that. And also another step that they will use if that doesn't work, or the head to head without common opponents that they don't move on, is a team success ranking. So what that means is that the teams that are better overall are going to get the bid into the conference championship game, not just of conference record, but just overall.
Effectively, the ACC was really embarrassed that a team that finished 7-5 won their conference.
Correct.
And so because of that, they're trying to make the changes to where, you know what, let's get a Clemson in that spot. Let's get a Miami in that spot who finished 7-1 and 7-2 respectively. Don't get us started on why most ACC teams are playing 9 games this year, but some are still playing 8, which...
Which I will point out...
That will bring in the success rating more of the or over the head-to-head.
Yes, and that is because, and like point blank, a lot of teams have the non-conference Power 5 games. It's all of them. Like Georgia Tech is playing 8 games.
Yeah,
they play Georgia in Athens. They play Tennessee and Colorado in Atlanta. Yeah, they have Mercer, but they're playing 11 Power 4 games. That's more than I think the entire rest of the league is. So I will give Georgia Tech and like Clemson, who plays South Carolina, as well as they play another Power 5 team. I just can't think of the top of my head right now. But that makes a little bit sense of why they're at 7. They're going to only play 8 conference games. But the team success rating is the team rating provided to the league at the conclusion of all regular season games. So basically, it's advanced metrics effectively saying...
Yeah, you're adding more numbers to it.
You're adding more numbers to it instead of just win-loss total. It's, okay, this is the best team based on where every other team is and not just a select group of teams. It's... Yeah, they played X, Y, and Z. The numbers say X, Y, and Z empirically per – I don't know if it's FPI or if it's a schedule ranking model, but this is the best team out of that group instead of, well, this team beat this team, and this does this, therefore the Duke Blue Devils should be in the ACC championship game. No, it's going to be the best teams, and that's going to give them the best success for if a Miami and a Clemson are both in at 10-1. And then one loses, or 10-2, or 11-1. One loses, one wins. They both have an opportunity to get in instead of like what happened last year of a Virginia team that would have made it if they won, albeit they'd probably be below Tulane or around Tulane. Duke wins, and the ACC title winner is left out completely, relying on Miami getting in as the last possible seed over Notre Dame.
Yeah, an at-large bid. It's something I don't know that I love it, and I know that we need to get the break, but you just get to the point of we can only beat the teams that are on the schedule. And right. I understand that the strength of schedule and the head-to-head should play a big factor, but it's the fact that the ACC's formula was so poor that it almost screwed over the conference completely. And especially imagine if Texas A&M wins that ugly game against Miami where neither offense wanted to do anything at all. Miami then loses in the first round. Then the ACC is basically blanked. They're trying to basically overcome those types of things to where that'll never happen again. But it's the fact of, because they understand where they sit in terms of the P4 conferences, that they're having to almost make inter-conference changes to almost sell the playoff committee even more.
I mean, yeah, imagine, I mean, or what happens if on fourth down, Texas A&M doesn't score a miracle touchdown in South Bend to pull the Aggies to win that game? If they drop that ball or Marcel Reed gets sacked, Notre Dame's at the college football playoff, the ACC is unrepresented. Or if the rules were in effect this year, Notre Dame would have been guaranteed a spot. The bubble shrinks by one. Miami is out of the college football
playoff.
Yeah, because
they essentially would have ruled that the American champion, conference champion, was greater than the ACC, right? Because it's the four conference champions plus another, but that doesn't have to include the ACC. People just assume naturally that it would, but there was a legitimate scenario that the ACC would have been completely blanked.
Yes, and I mean, that was a scenario that only got proven false when they revealed that Miami was the number 10 seed,
right?
Because of the idea that they couldn't do any, like, that just is a very concerning thing for a league that's already in trouble trying to stretch itself to California. I do like SMU and the ACC. We can get into that another time. But, and then as well as Florida State and Clemson lawsuits pending, if that had, that would have been a massive blow to the league where, yeah, your best team is playing in the Pop-Tart Bowl, which I love the Pop-Tart Bowl. And, but if it's like that's your conference champion, there's a, that the league would cease to exist.
Bowl games already don't mean anything. And if you have your conference champion, winning a bowl game on December 24th at 1:30 in the morning, I don't think that will bring too much excitement to the ACC. But enough of that. 20 minutes of ACC conversations?
You made a mistake letting me talk about the ACC, the Atlantic Coast Conference.
I will take that into consideration. And maybe I'll sit in front of the controls and make sure that your microphone just stays off whenever we talk about the ACC. No, just playing. But we will take a break. We'll come back and look at the transfer portal rankings, the updated ones, the updated expected transfer portal rankings, and how Auburn only has one name on their entire list that's transferring in, but a couple of big names that are transferring out, where they all rank, and how Auburn may be a little bit disrespected. We'll talk about that before we get to Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast, at 3:30. Stick around. We'll be back right after this.
You're on the line with Christian Griffin and Trip Upton. Be a part of the show by calling 334-321-1390 or text us at 334-784-1685.
Continuing our way here through the Thursday edition of On the Line, I think I might have bored Christian out of the room because of my ACC talk. I'm just kidding. He's taking a phone call right now. So you'll be with me for the next few minutes before we talk to Chris Gordy of the Locked On SEC podcast. So make sure to stay tuned there. ESPN's Max Olson released an article earlier this week about the top 100 transfers in the country. And Auburn is on here a solid amount. I wouldn't say that they are talked into a positive light, but their name appears on the article, I mean, 21 times, according to my command F on Google. But looking at this list, seeing what Mr. Olson says about the Auburn Tigers, he's a lot more concerned with the departures rather than the additions. The only addition for the Auburn Tigers is Byron Brown, the quarterback for the Auburn Tigers this upcoming season. He's listed at 15, and that seems a little low looking at some quarterbacks that are above him, Drew Mestemaker and Sam Levitt both above him there. But looking at this article, the big thing to take away is the detractions, the people transferring out of the program. Number one on the list, you don't have to scroll down far to find Auburn mentioned. It's Cam Coleman of the Texas Longhorns now. They list him as the number one transfer, and I think that's fair. I think from talent perspective, he is. Sam Levitt at number two. And then you don't have to scroll much further to find the next Auburn transfer. And you look, and it's number 23, Amaris Williams, the defensive edge that was at Auburn, was a freshman last season, had a big breakthrough year actually 2 years rather, and he transferred to the Georgia Bulldogs. I believe he was injured this past season, so I don't know if he will be playing at all, but he's mentioned here as well. Eric Singleton at number 40, the Florida Gator following John Summerall and his former offensive coordinator in Buster Faulkner to the Gators there. Kalen Lee on this list as well. He transferred to Tennessee. He's at number 56. Xavier Chaplin. Yes, you heard that correctly. He is the offensive tackle. He is going to Florida State. He's number 59 on this list. There's a couple more as well. Jay Crawford at 91. He's going to be an Ole Miss Rebel this year in the defensive back room. And then Deuce Knight, another one right below him at number 92. But when I look at this, and we'll get in more of this tomorrow as well, but are you really losing any sleep over not having a lot of these guys? Like Cam Coleman is the only one to me that sounds like it could be different, but we'll have to see. And we'll talk about it more tomorrow. When we return, Christian hopefully will be back. And we'll have Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast, on the phone lines.
Halfway through hour number two, you're on the line with Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7.
Only 30 minutes left here on the Thursday edition of On the Line as we continue to get down closer to SEC Media Days live next week from Tampa, Florida. There's no better person to talk to about what's going on across the Southeastern Conference than the host of the Locked On SEC podcast, Chris Gordy. Chris, are you going to be able, are you taking the road trip from your home in Houston, or are you going to be able to fly down to Tampa?
Oh, no, we got money now, guys. We fly everywhere. So,
there we go.
You know, 15 years ago, I would trek it from Houston over to Birmingham and, overnight road trip or early morning road trip. But, we're not quite first class, but at least we'll be flying out there.
Hey, you know, if you need to get them to land the plane in Auburn, we'll jump right in with you because we're taking our Sorrento down to Tampa next week. So, Chris, my first question, looking at the SEC, kind of the storylines that continue to come out getting closer to media days, the players have been announced, and Auburn bringing a offensive, defensive, and special teams player. Were you surprised by that at all for those selections for Coach Golish?
I wasn't obviously Byron Brown. I'm happy they're bringing him. Anytime schools can bring their quarterbacks, I thought the league's done a pretty good job last year and this year and bringing in more and more quarterbacks. Normally I'm anti special teams players. I get why teams do it. Somebody revealed this to me years ago that they like to vote, bring players that will be voted on these All-American teams. And, you know, if you're the only team that brings a kicker, well, guess what? When the media is going to vote for preseason All-SEC kicker, they're going to go with the guy who's most top of mind that they've talked to this week. And so, but I also think it's a great story. I mean, when you read about Alex McPherson and all, everything he's had to overcome, and yeah, I made a joke on our squad show this week. If you lose a large intestine, you get to go to SEC Media Days automatically. So, I think it's a good group champ. Anthony, I think is probably one of those names that if you don't know by now, you need to get to know, because he's just a baller. So, I like the group that Auburn's bringing.
Yeah, Auburn bringing a quarterback, one of the nine SEC teams to do so. Were you surprised by any omissions from that list? I know with, like, Alabama, they're still trying to decide a starting quarterback. Same with the Florida Gators. Were you surprised by any teams not bringing a starting quarterback?
Yeah, I mean, there's two. The big one is LSU. I mean, the fact that they're not bringing Sam Levin, I think, is a little bit I just don't agree with Lane Kiffin on not bringing Sam Levin. I mean, he was one of the biggest names in the transfer portal this offseason. He was your prized acquisition. He's the leader of your team. He's also a guy who's played for years at Arizona State, so it's not exactly like this is a true freshman that you don't want to bring. I know he dealt with injuries, and maybe they just don't want him to have to deal with all that, but I was just a little surprised. Bringing T.J. Dottery over Sam Levin was shocking, and then Missouri bringing, not bringing Austin Simmons, I think, is a little unusual because they went out of their way this spring to name him the starter at the end of spring practice. And I'm like, you know, and Eli Drinkwitz never does that. So I just figured, man, you already named the guy the starter. You might as well bring him. Also considering the fact that he was with Ole Miss there last year. So it's like, this is the guy who beat out Trinidad Shambles last year, was Ole Miss's starter, and now he's at Mizzou and they're not bringing him. And I think he deserves a lot of recognition. I'm shocked at how many preseason quarterback rankings lists that don't have Austin Simmons ranked very high, when I think he's really super talented. So those are kind of the two that jumped out to me on quarterback omissions. Yeah, Tennessee, Arkansas, Florida, Alabama, they all still have quarterback battles going on. So no surprise they didn't bring any.
Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast, here with us on the phone lines. And Chris, it took us two or three times reading over the media list to find your name to make sure you were coming to Tampa. But Christopher Gordy here joining us on the phone lines. And I guess that took us a lot longer than it should have to find your name. Any guys, now that we know, again, the three names for every team that you're excited to hear from the most? Is it maybe a quarterback, or is it maybe one of the guys that the national media, even the SEC media, may not know quite yet that you're excited to hear from?
Well, I'll start with, Texas, I think, you know, somebody pointed out to me that the three names they're bringing, Trevor Goosby, Arch Manning, and Colin Simmons, go look at some of the early mock drafts for next year, guys. A lot of them have these guys going top 15, if not top 10, all three. So that's star power that Texas is bringing, all three of those guys. And what's kind of crazy is if you look at the schedule, LSU and Texas are on the last day. Like, for those who don't know, SEC Media Days, the last day is usually like the day everybody's packing up and getting the hell out of there and leaving early and all this. You're not going to be able to leave early because Sark and Texas hit the podium at 2 o'clock. So if you want to get
strategic of the SEC,
you got to stay till the very end of SEC Media Days if you want to hear from Arch Manning. So I thought that was kind of surprising. You know, but I mean, look, it's good star power from everywhere. I think another one that jumped out to me was Mizzou bringing Jamal Roberts. Now, Jamal Roberts has been a great compliment running back the last few years at Mizzou, and obviously Tom Hardy last year. But that one made me kind of raise an eyebrow and go, hey, Ahmad Hardy got shot in the leg this offseason. We know he's rehabbing, but is that maybe a sign he's not going to be fully healthy or ready to go this season? Or maybe it doesn't return at all if they're bringing Jamal Roberts to media days. Again, maybe that's just looking a little too deep into it. Sure. But, again, you can only bring three guys, and you're bringing your backup running back? Something smells a little fishy there to me.
Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast. Switching gears a little bit to some of the baseball offseason storylines and the Rules Committee approving some new rules, including the expanded use of ABS. We saw it this spring in Hoover. Do you like the decision being made to kind of roll with that more overall, and where, quote unquote, where available, where most schools seem they're going to be having it available?
Yeah, I asked somebody about this. They said they think all the SEC parks are equipped with this, and they're gonna be good inside, obviously, conference season. So again, until I hear something different on that, it sounds like they should be good to go. And look, I think for the most part it went pretty well in Hoover. It didn't take a ton of time. They got the call right and got it in there pretty quickly. And if you look at the overturn rate, it was, you know, look, it's all about getting the call right. So I think this is good. I think it's been great for Major League Baseball. Everybody who made such a big deal out of it, oh my God, is this gonna make the game 4 hours? No, they get the call in very quickly. They look at the trackman and see where the ball was. Mm-hmm. And so I think this is great. I mean, for guys, I mean, going back to my days in college, we've been complaining about balls and strikes in SEC baseball. So this is going to go a long way at helping things.
You feel like it's just brought the dramatics back to baseball, right? Every single person in the crowd, everybody in the dugout, everybody on the field, they all hold hands and they look up at the big Jumbotron and they wait for the official screen to show whether it's a ball or a strike. And it's, I mean, why slow the game down? Why speed it up when you can have a moment of unity and make it to where it's about the umpire getting the call right? Some of the goals, or I guess some of the rules that are expected to be adopted by the SEC that they are planning on working working towards is the three batter minimum that I know that you have seen again with your knowledge and coverage with the Houston Astros, again working its way from the MLB, as well as the two pickoffs maximum. Do you feel like bringing the stolen base back into the back into the game, as well as speeding up pitchers that decide to throw it over 8-9 times per at bat or per inning or whatever the case may be? Your thoughts on those? Is there one that stands out, whether you're in approval or don't like it at all?
No, I love all of them. I mean, again, all these have been adopted in Major League Baseball, and they have all made the pace of play a lot quicker. The games are more enjoyable, and quite honestly, this has been needed. I mean, it's been nice to go to Major League ballparks, and, you know, most Astros games I go to these days are about 2.5 hours. And, you know, look, it just makes you have to – you want to get a second beer, you got to move to this concession line a little bit quicker. You want to – you know, grab a bathroom break, you got to be a little bit more strategic because the game's coming back, you know, the action's coming back a little bit quicker than it used to. Having gone to a few SEC baseball games this year, we need it. It's the games go on too damn long. Obviously, when we have weather delays and lightning and, hey, we're going to push the start of the game back. I mean, you're talking about games that go past the 10 p.m., 11 p.m. on Friday and Saturday night sometimes. I just think that, you know, this is a change that's needed. I don't think it's going to ruin the game or the experience, but we just need to speed these things up a little bit too much. And while we're at it, I want to add in a rule. I know it's not in there, but can we make the coach or the pitching coach walk to the mound a little bit quicker? My God, Kevin O'Sullivan, I think, sets the record for the slowest moving. And I get it. It's about getting your bullpen arm up and getting him ready. But, gosh, I would make a rule and go, once you leave the dugout, you have 15 seconds to get your butt to that mound. You better hurry.
That, and then the crowd favorite of the catcher goes and talks, and then makes the umpire walk all the way out to the mound, and then the catcher and the home plate umpire hold hands and walk back to the plate, and then you have the Sullivan walk, to where at that point it's 2 minutes gone by, and it feels like we're watching the World Cup of a guy rolling around, flopping, holding his shin, and the clock still continuing to run, and you don't have any sort of answers towards anything. Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast, here with us, and the MLB draft has come to a close. Your thoughts on what you saw? A lot of guys from the Southeastern Conference heard their name very early on. A couple of Auburn Tigers that were expected to make their way to the Plains have now signed professional contracts. And so your overall thoughts from a couple really impressive days with the MLB draft?
Yeah, it was cool. I think, what was it, 34 picks on day one for the SEC,
yeah,
you know, setting a record, and then 104 total selections. I just think, you know, we all know where the best baseball's played, and that's in the SEC. And I just think it's really interesting to see. I mean, it used to be, you know, there was this thing years ago where it was like, oh, college guys are getting picked less and less. You know, it's going back like 20, 25 years ago, because people wanted that high school talent, the cheap labor they could get in there and own and develop. Well, I think we're seeing more and more now teams are prioritizing 3- or 4-year experienced players that are 21, 22 years old. They want to get the clock going as quickly as possible. And we're starting to see guys called up quicker, you know, now more than ever. Obviously, Paul Skenes, Wyatt Langford with the Rangers. You know, look at Trey White from LSU, just got called up by the A's. I mean, if you've played SEC baseball at a competitive level for 3 to 4 years, I think MLB teams will look at that going, don't waste any time. Get this guy in Double A. Let's get him up to Triple A, and let's get him up here. You know, the Astros have one in Cam Smith, their right fielder from Florida State.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was literally a year later from playing in Omaha with Florida State, was on the Astros big league club. I think a lot of teams are thinking that way, and I think they're looking at SEC guys particularly. I talked with Dana Brown, the Astros GM, who, you know, he singled out watching some of these middle infielders in the SEC, and so there's a lot of talent there, and I think those guys, they kind of value and say those guys can get to the big leagues way quicker than some of these 17-year-old high school prospects. So it was cool to see, and man, my bigger takeaway is Arkansas. Did you see how many guys Arkansas had in the first few rounds? I'm like, God, the fact they didn't even get to Omaha this year, kind of embarrassing for Dave Van Horn. I know one of those was a big arm that was hurt all year, but gosh, Arkansas, how did you not get to Omaha with those guys?
Do you think, Chris, that the farm systems are losing a little bit of value? Because, again, we've even talked about the MLB draft proposals of taking the rounds down from 20 to 12 and making it to where high school prospects are no longer draft eligible. Are we at the point of the double A's and the triple A's, or I guess maybe not those, but more of the rookie ball, the low A, the high A, is that losing a little bit of value in terms of why do we need to babysit them for a couple of years when you can do so in the SEC, and then they only need a year or two by essentially playing double A ball to really blossom into an MLB prospect?
Yeah, and look, I think you know, this upcoming labor dispute is going to be very interesting with you know, if we end up with an MLB lockout or whatever ends up happening here. But one of the things that's proposed is letting kids be able to come straight from, you know, or not have to go, you know, become a high school, like have to go to college yeah. for a couple of years. And I think they were saying like 2 years as opposed to mm-hmm. the three. Like, I'm fine with that. I mean, the influx of talent we would have into SEC baseball
Imagine.
Would be absolutely insane. So I hope they pass that. You know, it would be fascinating. But, yeah, I mean, it would basically replace low A and high A. You yeah. could do away with those if your MLB teams just have double A, triple A, and that's all you need. And I think you would see a lot, you know, the development would be just as good because you're getting these college programs with really good coaches developing the talent as opposed to, you know, whatever sloppies are coaching down in single A.
Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast. A quick basketball question before we get you out of here. Ballin and Boutwell has been announced for both the Auburn Tigers as well as the Alabama Crimson Tide. Auburn taking on Florida State in a out-of-conference scrimmage matchup, but Alabama playing another SEC team in the Ole Miss Rebels. What are your thoughts on these kind of quote-unquote secret scrimmages that everyone seems to know about anyway?
Yeah, they're getting less and less secretive. I mean, that's the funny part. I know, you know, John Calipari used to do them at Kentucky. You know, here in Houston, the Kelvin Sampson has, you know, they've been doing them the last couple of years with the Houston Cougars. It gets your team ready, man. I mean, it's a great thing to you know, when you practice against each other so many days, you like to see some other talent, and you know, it's the same reason why the NFL does joint practices. They love to get that experience of going up against another high caliber team. And yeah, it's interesting. I heard Auburn was going up against Florida State. I did not hear the Alabama Ole Miss thing. So that's very interesting. And I think we're going to see it happen more and more. Cause again, it's no better way to get your team ready for the season than going up against some actual legitimate talented teams. And you know, again, this is a big year for Stephen Pearl, man. I hope this gets this team ready.
Yeah, we're hoping so too. We're hoping that we're not counting down the days of baseball. It feels like we've been in a little bit of like a cyclical thing of, man, halfway through football season, we're counting down to basketball, and then last season, halfway through basketball, we were counting down, pointing the finger, going, all right, Butch, pressure's on you. You got to go out and perform. And so if we're not talking about basketball or we're not talking about baseball for a little bit of time, shows that Alex Golish is hopefully making the right kind of noise in year one on the Plains. Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast, here with us, joining us as he does every single Thursday at 3:30. Plug everything you got going on right now. I know you have just a couple of more days, a couple more shows before you get to media days, and it feels like the dog days of talking season can finally be done.
Yeah, we've been doing more of our team previews this week. We did Florida, we did Georgia, today's show, we did Alabama, which if you're an Auburn fan, you may want to check out because we're talking about Alabama maybe being a 3 or 4 loss team this year. And kind of intriguing. If Kalen DeBoer has another 4-loss season this year, gosh, the folks at Tuscaloosa may get restless when it comes to him. So check it out, Locked On SEC.
Yeah, we'll just hope that both teams go 8-4, and we'll watch one fan base rejoice, and we'll watch another one just lose their absolute mind, and we'll sit here and we'll drink our coffee and just watch the world implode and celebrate in front of us. Chris, we appreciate your time. Looking forward to hanging out a little bit in Tampa and getting you on with the microphone right next to us next Thursday.
All right, fellas, pack the sunscreen. It's going to be hot as hell down there.
Yes. Hey, bringing the Texas heat with you. Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast with you. Appreciate your time, as always. We'll take a break. We'll come back and wrap up the Thursday edition of the show right after this.
You are on the line with Christian Griffin and Trip Upton on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and on the Radio Alabama app.
Right. wrapping up the Thursday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. Appreciate everybody for being here with us. Appreciate our two guests as well. Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network joined us at 2:30 to talk all things Auburn baseball. Coach Ammo, as we got to play a little bit of his media availability and the introductory presser, essentially, of him making his way to the Plains, being able to be a part of that. Really, really cool. A big thank you to George Nunnally as well for sharing yes. that audio with us, making it all happen to where we can give you guys all of that audio. And Brad Law being able to close down that conversation, talking about the legacy of what Gabe Gross was able to do, his transition into the athletic department, Coach Ammo taking over for that, as well as the three big names making their way to Tampa with Coach Golish. And then Chris Gordy, who you just heard, host of the Locked On SEC podcast, for really closing it out for us here this afternoon. And again, just really excited for a really fun show tomorrow, a really fun show again today, but a special guest making his way into the studio tomorrow to talk basically all things Auburn in terms of media day. I know we're going to do a big breakdown on what you can gain versus what could happen if you lose each of those games, breaking down the 12 games of Auburn's schedule. And so should be a lot of fun here tomorrow, just as it is every single day here between 2 and 4 on ESPN 106.7.
Yeah, no, excited. It's weird thinking that tomorrow will be the last day that we do a show in studio for 4 days, and then we head out to Digital Drive. We were looking, I think we said the other day that we were looking all who's near us. And so, again, I'm excited to be able to experience it. And, you know, we got some friends near us. We've got some people that we can meet as well that are just potential new friends. So it's still going to be an exciting week.
Yeah, going to be a whole lot of fun. We told you that we would tease a name on the way out and kind of start giving you a little bit of insight onto who we have scheduled for interviews. And what better way than on Monday afternoon, kicking the show off, how about we bring in the coach that's won a national championship for the Auburn Tigers, Coach Gene Chizik, joining us live on Monday afternoon to get our show started. Just the first of many wonderful guests that we are really, really excited for to talk with in Tampa, Florida. He is Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. We appreciate everybody for spending your afternoon here with us on ESPN 106.7. Sports are so much better with an opinion. Whether you love them, whether you hate them, we're back tomorrow to talk all about them, and we hope you'll be there to join us.